Ron Van Dam, a man, a microphone, and a complete lack of conversational filters. This is the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Thank you for your financial contribution. Thank you for being you. Thank you for your kind words. Thank you for not bothering me. Thank you for wearing a mask and preferably a bag over your head. Calm down. All right. Thank you very much. Well, you know, we're coming out of the pandemic thing. I know a lot of states are dropping all restrictions this holiday weekend, the high holidays. And wow, huh? I mean, it's been a horrendous experience. But there is something that I'll be missing about the pandemic. As weird as it may sound. I will miss a few things about the pandemic. I will miss the original shortage of toilet paper. To me, that was the crux of survival. There's no toilet paper on the shelves in the supermarkets or in the stores. That was exciting to me. How am I going to handle this? Napkins? What am I going to do? Save the newspapers? Oh, that was exciting. What else will I miss? Oh my God. Staying 6 feet away from other people. That was lovely. It was like an automatic restraining order. Stay 6 feet away from me. Oh, how did you know that's what I've wanted all my life? Hi, Ron. How are you? How's... Sorry, you're a little too close. 6 feet away, please. But Ron, don't argue with me. You are within the perimeter of my comfort zone. Please back up. But Ron, don't talk to me. Back up before you say anything. Keep your distance. Some aspects of this that were wonderful. I didn't have to smile for over a year. No one could see my mouth. So they didn't know if I was frowning or smiling or giving some type of a sarcastic growl. They didn't know. They couldn't see the expression on my face. It was wonderful. I didn't have to smile. My muscles relaxed for over a year. It was beautiful. Ron, I can't tell. Are you happy? Are you sad? No, you can't tell, can you? And then there were the people. people of mystery. It was exciting, almost sexually stimulating, not quite, but almost. People looked like they were mysterious, like at a masquerade party. I don't know what they look like. I can only imagine what's under that mask. That's exciting. People who hadn't been to the dentist in well over a year, they couldn't because of the pandemia. Their teeth were turning yellow, their gums were bleeding, but you couldn't tell because the mask covered all of your mouth. You didn't have to brush your teeth. Nobody had bad breath because you couldn't smell them. Ah, the mask. Are you being safe from the virus? Or are you about to rob a liquor store? We don't know. And then, I used to make believe during the pandemia that I couldn't hear people. They'd be talking to me. Ron, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. That mask is muffling your voice. I can't hear you.
How about now? Can you understand me?
Don't bother talking to me. I can't hear you. I'm sorry. I can't hear you. That was so fantastic. At the beginning of the pandemia, I gave out false information for my own purposes. I said, you know, you're supposed to stay 30 feet away from me.
Ron, I thought it was only 6 feet.
No, it's 30. They made it 30 now. 30 feet away. Sorry. Ron, would you like to come over and see pictures of the baby? I can't come over to your house. I'm not allowed to.
Well, how about Zooming?
I don't have a computer.
You don't have a computer? Do you have a cell phone?
I don't. I live in a log cabin with Lincoln. I have no amenities whatsoever, so you're gonna have to leave me alone till this thing is over. My dentist called me during the pandemic and said, Ron, can we have a virtual dentist office visit? I said, how do you do a virtual dentist office visit? No, I'm sorry.
But Ron, how am I supposed to put my kids through college if you don't get your teeth cleaned?
I didn't choose this profession, you did. Yeah. I'll be missing certain aspects of this pandemic. Eating outside in a cafe in the middle of December. Bizarre, but interesting. Oh, well. Now it's over and life gets somewhat back to normal. Now there's going to be people all over the place. Oh, these people. Oh, they walk amongst us. These floundering little human beings that knock into each other and say stupid things to each other. And now they're all back out on the streets. Oh, the place is littered with these human beings of all different types and stupidity levels. Oh, here we go again. Remember the days when everybody had to be quarantined, where they had to stay in their homes? I didn't have to look at them or hear from them or anything. They just stayed in their little cells, you know what I mean? But now, they've all been released from prison and they're all walking the streets, doing their thing, cluttering up this planet. Oh, man. Sure, am I glad the virus is going away? Of course I am.
I don't know if you got your vaccination or not. I mean, that's totally up to you. If you want to be restricted as to what you can do by private businesses, that's up to you. But get vaccinated, get back to normality, and just remember one thing. Stay 6 feet away from me. It is sad in a way. It's like an old friend saying goodbye. Goodbye, mask. But no, we still have to wear the mask private places. You know, this dropping of restrictions is for the public and public locations. Individual companies, of which they all are, can say, no, you can't come into our store without a mask. They can do that. That's allowed. So it's not going to totally go away all that soon. And in schools, people are still going to have to wear masks. I know. Here's the deal, man. Just because somebody says, now you can come here and do the stuff you used to do, it's still your choice whether you kind of take care or not. I'll tell you something very honestly, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. If I go to the movies, and I haven't been for well over a year, when I do go back to a movie theater, I'm wearing a mask. I don't care what you say. At least for a period of time. As long as there's other inconsiderate schmucks within my 6 foot zone, if I'm not eating popcorn, and I usually don't in the movie theater because popcorn is full of sodium and will kill you by the time the movie ends, I'll sit in the movie theater and I'll be wearing a mask because don't bother me. Yep, I think I will. If I go to the theater, a play or something like that, or a sporting event or a concert where there's a lot of people, who, by the way, always annoyed me, I might just continue to wear that mask. And I don't care what other people think anymore, because they don't care what I think anymore. Yep. So just be smart about it, is all I'm saying. You know, just because someone tells you you can or can't do something, you can take extra precautions. Anyway, so how you doing, by the way? Welcome to the program. My name is Ron Van Dam. I won't identify myself any further than that because you're not doing anything to introduce yourself to me. I don't hear you talking to me saying, hello, my name is Susan. Here's something interesting, ladies and gentlemen. Went to a tapas bar. Have you ever been to a tapas bar before? T-A-P-A-S, a tapas bar. Yeah. What they do is, that's like, it's like going to a buffet. You choose little things, you know, it's like, you know what I'm saying? The problem with a tapas bar is you've got to be really careful how you pronounce that. Because if you're not real specific about the exact letters in the word tapas bar, it sounds like topless bar. So a friend of mine, of which I have very few, I have tons of acquaintances. Friends, rare. I like my friends like I like my meat, rare. Friend says to me, Ron, there's a new restaurant. They've dropped the restrictions, and I love this place. So, oh, really? Yeah. He says, yeah, you want to go to a tapas bar? And I said, well, I guess, I don't know. I suppose so. Yeah, it's great. You know, they serve food at this tapas bar. Oh, they serve food at a tapas bar? Yes, they do. They have all kinds of meats and things like that, and you can just grab what you want. At a tapas bar? Yes, it's a great tapas bar. Wow. Do they have naked? Well, obviously they have naked women. No, they don't. It's a tapas bar. Well, if it's a tapas bar, then they must have naked women. No, they have food. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? A tapas bar. Yeah, a tapas bar. No, Ron, I think you're missing. It's a T-A-P-A-S, a tapas bar. Oh, I thought you said topless bar. No, I don't want to go to the tapas bar. I was doing an interview a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about the Greater Antilles and the Lesser Antilles. Yeah, first of all, I thought Antilles was somebody's aunt. You know, I'm going to Antilles for the holidays. Oh, that's great. Well, it's lesser than I thought. Yeah, there's a Lesser Antilles. How can somebody have an address in the Lesser Antilles? I mean, you can do north and south, east and west, but greater and lesser? Oh, my God. Who the hell named this place? Want to come over for the weekend? Sure. Where do you live? Lesser Antilles. Excuse me? What did you say? The what Antilles? The lesser of the two Antilles. You live in the Lesser Antilles? Lesser Antilles. Wow, that's embarrassing. I can't even say it. I can't even write it on the envelope. It's just so embarrassing. Why don't you live in the Greater Antilles? There was nothing available. The only thing open was stuff in the Lesser Antilles, and it's just so freaking demeaning. Oh, my God. We don't even have a supermarket. We have to go to the Greater Antilles. It's just really embarrassing. And the roads in the Lesser Antilles are all gravel. It's just awful. Oh, and everybody here is ugly in the Lesser Antilles. Greater Antilles, beautiful people. Dress well, attractive. I'm in the lesser of the two Antilles, and oh my God. In comparison, the Lesser Antilles, an awful place to live. We can't get anything here. We don't even get cable because we're the lesser one. Wow, why don't you move out of the Antilles completely? I can't. There's water around us. It's like an island. It's just really demeaning. Oh, my God. You know, a lot of people aspire to be doctors or lawyers or whatever. I just aspire to get out of the Lesser Antilles. Oh, my God, it's awful. The Lesser Antilles are awful. I have a guest coming up soon. We'll talk to our guest momentarily.
Give the gift that says, I love you. The gift that says, happy birthday. The gift that says, get well soon. The gift that says, you're the reason I went into the priesthood. The gift that says, congratulations on not getting indicted. The gift that says, I want to cover you in warm chocolate pudding. The gift that says, good luck in clown college. The gift that says, thanks for removing my unsightly wart. The gift that says, sorry about giving you food poisoning. The gift that says, I'll see you in hell. The gift that says, remember the good times we had in prison. The gift that says, I want to make sweet love to you on the white sand beaches of Rio while your hot cousin watches. The gift that says, thank you for the kidney. The gift that says, you deserve all the best, but this will have to do. The gift that says, thanks, Jesus. Whatever you want to say, you can say it beautifully with a timeless gift from Phyllis Gorman's House of Macaroni Art. On Route 94, just past the Rotary, across from Sweaty Palmer's Adult Emporium.
Hello, Alexis. How are you today?
I am great, thank you. How are you doing?
Not so bad so far, but it's early.
I hear you. Well, I'm so excited to join you so early.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Alexis Glick is here. She is a veteran media executive and television personality. Money for Breakfast, The Opening Bell. You know it. Thanks for being with us today. Well, we're starting to have post-pandemic conversations, which is nice. It's inviting on the other side of it somewhat. But we leave behind some remnants, don't we?
We certainly do. I mean, we you know, as we sit here today, you know this, and your listeners know this better than anyone. You know, that the longer term consequences of COVID are the issues that a lot of us have to grapple with, and particularly someone like me who spent a massive chunk of my career in media, but now, you know, in my role as CEO of a philanthropy that supports 40 million kids in America and whose kind of true north is to create healthier school communities, we sit here and we look at the consequences of COVID on kids. And one of the key areas of focus that we have is what do we do to empower, elevate, and uplift kids? And they are struggling.
Yeah. Now, I know that there was a new national study that was done on the impact, and what did that produce?
Well, essentially what we did is we surveyed teens at the start of COVID just to see how they were coping with the stresses associated with COVID, whether it be isolation, distance learning, many of them dealing with food insecurity and a whole range of other issues. We then went back to them a year later to see how were they coping in today's environment, and the data was sobering. We talked to teens ages 13 to 18 years old, and here's the reality. 3 out of 4 of them say the pandemic has impacted their academic readiness. Half of them report social and emotional well-being concerns. 56% say they've lost control of their lives. 4 out of 10 of them feel isolated from other people. 1/4 of them, almost 1/3, are worried about their family's long-term financial viability. And, you know, 53% of them say they've lost the happiest and most exciting years of their lives. So the realities that our kids are facing right now coming out of COVID are pretty daunting.
Yes, it's interesting because everything that you described is what adults went through as well, but teens always had this blanket of security protection from the parents or their institution, the schools, whatever, their friends. They always had that shelter. But the shelter was taken away, and there aren't many generations that actually go through something like that. So that will be interesting.
You know, it's such a great point that you raise because, you know, one of the things that our survey did find at the beginning and even a year later is the relationship between teens and their parents or their caregivers is closer than ever because they've really had to rely on each other. And we know that kids are incredibly resilient, but the fact of the matter is, the extent to which there's this underlying fear that's permeated all areas of their lives, whether it be academic, financial, social, what our biggest concern is what does this mean for a mental, emotional health crisis as we go back into schools this fall? And it's not just the kids, as you know. It's the educators as well who are grappling with a lot of mental health concerns as well because they've been tasked with essentially working 24/7 to stay connected to kids, and that's been incredibly challenging, but it's also just changed the nature of how we communicate, how we relate, how we thrive in an environment where we're seated next to one another. As we head into this summer, there's a lot for us to think about in terms of how we connect with kids and what we do to support them as we head into the next school year.
Very interesting. Yeah, we don't know where it's going to be in the fall. We assume things will be back to quasi-normal, and then maybe this will just be a thing of the past. But you're right, for teens, that was a part of their life that they'll never get back. For adults, it was a small slice that, you know, not as impactful. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, and you know, and I think, Ron, the thing I would say to folks who are tuning in right now is, look, I mean, number one, you know, 1 in 4 kids, you know, had, you know, fear they've lost academic opportunities, that they'll gain admission into the school of, you know, of their or of their choice, that they'll get a job. The statistics are staggering. So I would just say colleges and employers need to be aware of the fact that kids are concerned about their upward mobility and if they're going to get those chances. I'd also just say to parents and caregivers who are tuning in, find ways to get kids involved. You know, if you're facing, you know, family hardship, you know, what can they do to contribute? You know, one of the best things in life to boost someone's esteem is, you know, is to get them engaged in doing something to support the family. I think about, of course, supporting our educators. Make it the best use of the summer. How can we give our students back the confidence that they've lost? I just assembled 5 high school and college age kids, some of which were my own kids, to help advise my my organization on a project that we're doing, and they were the best thinkers in the room. So just find ways to connect, listen to them, engage them, reboost their confidence. The most important thing is we can is listen, ask, probe, and just show that we care, because right now what they're not saying is what we need to, to be listening for.
Interesting. But, you know, Lexis, in the long run, I think it's going to build more character for them, more independence, become more solid. I think things are going to turn around to their benefit, perhaps, if they look forward. I have a quick question for you that's a little bit off the topic, if I may.
Sure.
One thing, because you're a financial expert, I never understood how the economy dipped, but the stock market just kept climbing and climbing and climbing. I can't put those two together during this past year. Is there any explanation for that?
You know, Ron, I'll be frank with you.
Sure.
You know, what we saw in the early March timeframe of last year is essentially the entire economy seized up, right? So when the stock market tumbled initially, it's because, you know, we've never in American history shut down not just our economy, but the global economy in simpatico at one moment in time.
Right.
The difference, though, between the stock market and the real economy is that immediately once the Federal Reserve Bank decided that they were going to do repurchases in the marketplace, that we were going to put together fiscal stimulus packages. So what we did is we put together fiscal and monetary stimulus packages, you know, pretty expeditiously and thankfully, right? Because it rescues the economy from a real chasm at the time. But the stock market was reacting to all that fuel that was going to be pumped into the economy. So oftentimes the stock market can be a leading or a lagging indicator. And truly, as you know, it's not a reflection of the real economy in terms of employment, in terms of where we are in housing and other things.
Right.
We'd like to think it is, but the fact of the matter is it's a reflection of the balance sheets of the businesses that we do business with. But the stock market doesn't reflect small businesses, and that's, you know, over half of the private sector job growth in America.
Gotcha.
So if there's, to your point, Ron, I would just tell you, I wrote a lot of pieces on this. Never in my career have I seen a greater disconnect between where the stock market was and where the real economy was. But the stock market is acting on where is that access to capital? How is it going to fuel those, you know, publicly traded businesses?
Mm-hmm.
And between monetary and fiscal policy, it helped achieve that. And so that's why it remained disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
But as you know now, a lot of folks are focused on this kind of roaring 20s that we think we're going to bring back.
Yeah.
Housing is off the charts.
Right.
You know, there are areas of the economy right now that are going to snap back so aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
Now the question, though, is are we going to wind up in a situation where the economy retools, but the stock market compresses? And I think that's what we're about to witness.
Yeah. So now it's a disconnect in a different sense, or it's a connection that was never made before. Interesting stuff. Now, if we do have teens in our family or that we know who seem to be a little bit concerned, and sometimes they don't show it, you have to sometimes pull it out of them. A, it's a good thing to talk about it, and B, they need support. And where do they go to get that?
Well, Ron, I just want to say thank you. You know, from the bottom of my heart, as a mother of four children and as someone who works with 40 million kids in America, thank you for sharing this story. You can go to genyouthnow.org to read our full report. It's about life disrupted, the impact of COVID-19 on teens. We have a list of recommendations of what you can do to engage your kids, to get them out, get them moving, to help build their confidence, to make sure they're feeling safe as they head back into the school building. But, you know, look, at the end of the day, our kids' future depends on all of our support. And frankly, so does our nation and our economy. If we as parents need to get back to work, we need our kids to feel safe in the school building. And now is the time to have that conversation. So thank you for your willingness to share this really important story, because it affects employees who have kids, It affects, you know, the health and well-being of our economy, and frankly, it'll address what we know is a pending mental health crisis if we don't address it now.
Wonderful. And thank you for what you've done and what you're doing now. We do appreciate that as well. Well, that'll do it for me today. You have been wonderful. Thank you to my guests. Thank you to you. Have yourself a wonderful holiday weekend. I'll be back again on Monday. Ron, Monday's a holiday. I know. But I'll be back again on Monday with a brand new show. But until then, well, I wish you peace. Take care.